Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Dirty Playologist. It took some doing, but we drugged Keisha and Barb into the studio to record. They're going to be digging deep and getting to the roots of play. Things like knowledge, skills, understanding, and power. Here are your hosts, Keisha and Barb.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Dirty Playologist. It's Keisha here with my lovely co-host,
Barbara Sheridan.
And today we're going to talk about trouble.
That's right. Trouble. Who's in trouble?
Well, this topic, I feel like we have to talk about this because it was something that kind of, I guess, like, really dawned on me this week. I don't know that it dawned on me, but it dawned on me this week that we definitely handle situations where I think in traditional programs or even in homes differently, and children aren't getting in trouble in the traditional sense of the word. And I'm speaking about timeouts, calling parents, having lectures, things like that, where children are walking away feeling negative about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why I guess it kind of stood out to me is because I have a couple stories, and they all have different outcomes, and being able to see them side by side because they all happened within the span of 2 days really gives me like some serious perspective when you sit back and like look at it and think about it. I'll start with one of the stories that happened with two of our very young threes. And this is a typical thing that happens with these two children, or in general with this age group. We have several wagons on the playground, but of course the wagon that somebody has is the prized possession. So one of our friends, he played with it earlier, and once he plays with it in his heart and in his soul, it is his. So he can put it down, walk away, do 10 other things, but the second another child touches it, he's reminded that it's his. So
yeah.
It was one of those moments where the two kids were kind of like both tugging on the wagon. And I always observe first. I don't go running over. I'm never like an abrupt intruder in their play or their conflicts. So I'm observing and watching and listening. And some of what I was hearing was pretty awesome because you're hearing the children using language that we have modeled. So one of the children who just turned three this week was being very great vocally and verbally, saying, "It's my turn. You can have it when I'm done. I had it first. It's my turn. You can have it when I'm done. I had it first." And then the third time, he's like, "It's my turn." And this time, it included a shove because the child was not giving in. So I'm walking closer, like, okay, I'm starting to feel like they may need a little support. And the other child, it's really funny because he's a second, English is his second language. So while he can clearly understand, he was just repeating back what the other child was saying. "It's my turn. You can use it when I'm done." So as I'm walking toward them, you know, they're both kind of shoving and tossing and pushing. And I know that I have not only worked in places, but been the person myself early in my career who would walk over to a situation like that, immediately separate the children, immediately tell them both, "We don't hit," and it either put them in a timeout or not allow either one of them to play with the wagon, or, you know, give them a lecture about it, or I would solve the problem myself. But that is definitely not how we deal with that at Discovery, or how we've dealt with it, how I've dealt with it for years. And what I see coming out of, one, first observing before we even get into it, just to see, what are they going to do? How are they going to handle it? What is the issue? What are the two points of view? What do they need? Because sometimes they don't need us at all. And other times they definitely need guidance. So in this case, I saw that it was kind of escalating, and it wasn't going to solve. They weren't going to solve it themselves. So I walked over and I put my hand on the wagon handle. And that was not to take it away from either one of them, but to neutralize it. So it wasn't this, that wasn't the focus anymore. They weren't pushing and pulling. And as soon as I put my hand on it, they were both still holding on to it, but the grabbing and the tug of war stopped. And I said, hey guys, what's going on? And then I was quiet because it's more about us listening than us talking. And it's, for me, it's not about me solving, just figuring out who had it first. That doesn't matter. It's not about me making everybody happy at the end. That's not the goal either. For me, the goal is to support them in both explaining their point of view and kind of figuring out what do we do next. So the one child who had it was repeating himself and saying, I had it first. It's my turn. You can go next. And I just simply looked at the other child and echoed what he said, and then silence. And when you're quiet, they talk to you. You know, when you're looking at them and you're on your level and you're quiet, they talk to you. Then the other child said, I want it. So at that moment, I say, I hear you. You really want it. So to me, I think the most important thing, and what I notice when a child puts their guard down and they're no longer in fight mode, is when they understand that you hear them and you understand their perspective.
Yeah.
So the second I say, I hear you, and I repeat what they said to me, it's just that, and putting my hand on it, just, it's like putting water on a fire. It kind of sizzled down. Mm-hmm. So that was one example where they solved it themselves. I just simply sportscasted what they were saying and you know, repeated it. And kind of diffuse the physical part so that they can focus on the verbal part.
Yeah.
I don't think that happens in a lot of schools. I think that the focus is more on punishment or figuring out who had it first or the teacher making it right and not necessarily the lesson.
The one thing you're talking about now, I think, is what, basically the thing that changes when you're looking at things happening within a child-directed program, which is, again, it goes back to who's in charge. Because we just had our term podcast came out a few weeks ago. And, you know, you have to look at who's in charge. And when you're looking at, like, a teacher-led classroom, the teacher comes in and they make a judgment or they make a decision about what's going to happen, because that's appropriate for a teacher-led classroom because the teacher is in charge. And when you're looking at child-led, you have to flip that and say the teacher isn't going to make the decision or a judgment. What they're going to do is give the tools to the children so the children can figure out, figure out what their judgment of the situation and figuring out the changes that need to be made. So you give it back to that. So I think that's a really important part of having a child directed program.
And sometimes it doesn't happen so smoothly. Sometimes the one child is like, no, I want it. And it's a back and forth until someone decides that this is not worth it anymore. And I'll go second. But and that's the thing. It's not always pretty. It's not always everyone's happy at the end.
And it's not always clean cut.
Exactly.
Like, okay, like when a teacher comes in and says, okay, you get it first and then you get it, it's done, it's over, it's clean cut. But it's a lot messier when the children decide themselves because they're coming up with their own unique solutions that might not look as clean as an adult would.
And it might take time. And I think that's another thing that we need to remember, myself included. It's something that I'm always reminding myself and I'm always trying to refine, is that it takes time. This work that we're doing with children, when we're in these child-directed programs and these play-based programs, it's every interaction, every conflict is more and more learning, and that stuff takes time. So not, I always say we're not thinking of the end goal. It's just like with art, it's the process, like that process that they're going through that's so rich with learning. So we're not necessarily thinking of the end goal. I'm not going over there because I have to fix this. I'm simply going over there so they don't rip each other's faces off and I can support them. through this process. But on the flip side, today I have two boys that are like best friends. They're so close that they're like brothers, and you know what that means. Conflict. Yep. Like brother type of conflict. So today they were playing, and they had this, it was kind of cute watching, because they, and I don't want to use the word cute, but it was kind of interesting watching them playing with this, one of the girls bought a Barbie and she left it there, and they found it, and it was a mermaid. And one of the boys, and these are like the biggest boys in the school, he picks it up. He goes, somebody left their Barbie. He's walking around asking everybody, whose Barbie is this? Whose Barbie is this? The child whose Barbie it is wasn't here today, so he couldn't find anyone. And he, you know, kind of looking at it, very interested in it, but, you know, of course he didn't want to play with it because society says that that would be wrong. But then he noticed it has water in its tail, so he started shaking it. And then he got the idea that he needed water. So he went inside and started filling up buckets with water and dumping into the sensory table and going back in and up into the sensory table and announcing that he was making an ocean for the mermaid. So next thing I know, he's got the mermaid. It's swimming around. All his friends are crowded around. I mean, they are over there, this one Barbie, and they're all engaged for – I mean, at least 30 minutes. And then I was on the other side of the playground, but I could see them. I don't know what caused it, this to happen, but he picks up the mermaid and he swings her and it smacked his friend in the cheek. And it was not by accident. And I know it wasn't by accident because it looked in his face, and then he did it again. And then his friend, of course.
So even if the first one was a discovery, the second one was not.
Yes, exactly. I'm not sure if the first one was on purpose or not. I didn't feel like it was an accident. But anyway, so yeah. He did it again, and his friend was really, really upset. And he was screaming and crying and trying to find something to pick up and throw at him. So, of course, I wanted to get between that. So I came over, and because of the physical aspect of him picking up something, and I know the child, and he will pick up something that he knows is going to hurt. So I walked, put my body between them, and then I said, I see that you're upset. And I was quiet, because, again, you come in, you say, I hear you, I see you, and then you're quiet. And he said, you know, he hit me. I don't know why he hit me. And then, so I moved out of the middle at that point because I saw, you know, they weren't clenched fists. He didn't have anything heavy. And they were face to face. So he was speaking to him now. I don't know why you hit me. That hurt, kind of thing. He's explaining his point of view. And then the other child was, I think he was a cross between embarrassed, sorry, and still upset. And he stuck out his tongue and he said, pointed his finger and said, you stupid! Stuck out his tongue. And his friend was like double devastated now. He's like, I'm not stupid, you know, just getting really, really upset. And he wanted to talk about it because that's what we do at the school. And his friend was just too upset to really have a conversation with him. He's just calling him names. So yeah. So I kind of kneeled down with the child who was very upset and gave him the opportunity to talk to me because you could tell he needed to get it out. So he's getting his needs met while the other child who's super upset, super embarrassed and ashamed, and I'm thinking he's pretty sorry but too upset to like admit that, needed to not be pressured to talk about it right at that moment. So my focus was on supporting the hurt child. And at the same time, not being upset with the child who did the hurting. You know, I think that's important too, that we don't come over and we don't have our own our emotions in it and our own biases in it and try to separate that. And that's a hard one for me. Well, it was a hard one for me, but I had one child who quickly taught me to leave my own emotions out of it because that just escalates the situation, I feel. So after they separated for a while, these two are known to, like, in the middle of me trying to support them through a conflict, decide that they're actually both against me and go run off playing. So they do, and I'm like, seriously? I'm trying to support you guys in this. So,
come on, let me finish my process here.
I know. Let me help you. So, you know, the child who needed his time had his time. The child who needed to talked and got his, you know, gotten taken care of. So at that point, I kind of stepped back and I observed. Well, the child who was upset and ashamed went inside. He came back with two stuffed bunnies. He gave one to the other child. And they started using the bunnies to talk out their conflict.
Yeah.
I was like, jaw drop. And he was like, you hit me and I didn't like it. Like using the bunnies as puppets. And he said, well, I didn't mean to hit you. I'm sorry. You know, just that whole. And I was like, wow, like, what a tool. What a very advanced method of handling this. He wasn't ready to handle it himself, but he knew
he needed that space between him and the problem. Yeah.
Amazing. The things that children can teach us. So it just reminded me how... Or made me think of how not approaching things in a way that a child feels like they're in trouble allows them to not shut down.
Yeah. Yeah, and paying attention to what their needs are because, you know, I wasn't there, but to me it sounds like, you know, when you were explaining about being with the one child, it sounded like that the other child needed that space, mm-hmm. that he was too close and he couldn't really react to it. So he needed some space from the actual thing going on. So you going to the other child was appropriate, not just for the child who was hurt, but for the other one who needed that space. Mm-hmm. So you were actually taking care of both of them during that. Whereas a lot of the time, again, if it's that teacher coming in a program where it's like, okay, I got to get this settled and done so that I can move on with the next thing, mm-hmm. they're forcing that one child who needs that space, no, we need to settle it now. Yeah. You know, you need to stay here so we can talk this through. And then it becomes too much. I had one child that would basically happen with where, you know, if he was confronted too early into the problem, he would just basically fly off and go crazy. And he'd actually been... suspended from school for that very thing because they did not realize at the school that if something happens, you need to give him mm-hmm. a little bit of a break before you deal with him. And so like a lot of, like basically it's taking care of both sides of the actual conflict and both kids at the same time.
It's amazing. The children are they're just so amazing. And I think that one of the most important things we could do aside from listening to them, making them feel heard, and coming at them with a calm, even tone. Like they know that you're coming over to support them. They don't feel like they have to hide or run or lie or cheat or sneak.
Yep.
Because they know that we're supporting them, both sides. And it's not about sides. And it's not about winners and losers and who's right and who's wrong. And I think that's the most important impression that we can give to the kids because it frees them up to be able to do those things themselves, like go get the bunnies. Or have the communication with each other saying, no, it's my turn, you can go next, because they've heard that. We've modeled that for them. Now, my next story kind of brings a parent into the mix. And I asked the parent today, he was so awesome. I asked him if I could bottle him and then keep him in case I needed to spray him on other people in the future. Everyone who works with children have the incidents where a child cuts their hair. And we have it at least once a year. Like clockwork, at least once a year. And today was that day. We have scissors all over the place. We have scissors inside. We have scissors outside. The children of all the ages in my classroom from 2 to 5 have access to scissors. And today, two of my friends who often, they always go under the picnic table and hang out under there just when it's just like a cozy spot for them. So they're under there and they're looking real cozy, but they're also looking a little suspicious and they're kind of looking at me. Like I'll glance over their direction and I get that really, you know, kids are not good at being sneaky at all. I get that really like suspicious smile. And I even said, what are you guys doing? You're looking suspicious. And then I said, you know what suspicious means? And they go, what? I said, like, you're up to something. And they just giggle, ha, 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 ha. I even see scissors in their hand, but that's not abnormal because we're cutting grass all the time. And, we always have scissors. It's not a new thing. So I go on about my business. A few minutes later, two girls have a nice little haircut. So I go, I noticed that your hair looks different. And they're like, huh? And you can see that they're casing me. I was like, I have to be very careful not to be like, you cut your hair kind of, like, even look on my face. Because if I do that, I'm automatically setting them up to lie to me. I'm automatically setting them up to hide and to, like, to lie. So,
and it's a judgment that you're making, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you want to keep that out.
Judgment-free zone, okay? So they come out from under there, and so time passes, and they're one of the children's both, even the nanny and the father both had great responses, and I was like, wow, you never know with parents what you're gonna get. So her dad comes, and I go, hey, yeah, it was a great day. You're gonna notice when you see your daughter that her hair may look a little bit different. And then I told him the story, and he was like, oh, and he goes, Katie, he has an English accent. He goes, Katie. I was, I see your hair looks different there. So you got a haircut there. And she just kind of giggles because she's trying to case him too. Like, oh gosh, like, am I in trouble? And he goes, oh, you wanted to cut your hair? And she said, no. First she goes, he goes, so what happened there? And she goes, it was, she was trying to do like 20 questions with him. You know, round things, they have points on the top. He was like, oh, yes, scissors. And she goes, yes, scissors. And she goes, yes, scissors cut my hair. He said, oh, really? The scissors did it all by themselves? Yep. He goes, Katie. And she goes, I know you cut your hair. Did you want your hair to look different? And she said, yeah. He said, you didn't like it. And she said, no. He said, okay, it's your hair. But just remember, if you cut it, you can't glue it back on, so you better like it. Did you like it? And she said, yeah. He said, okay. And I was like, oh. That is so awesome. He says, your hair, you're in charge of it. But don't just remember if you don't like it. Sorry. He said, but maybe next time we can go get it cut at the hair cutter. She's like, okay. Okay, Dad. And the nanny said, don't they all? She goes, don't we all do that at some point in our life? I was like, I just like those real authentic responses and not immediately reprimanding.
And yeah, again, they're making the judgment. Like, what his reaction was a perfect example of that because he literally took his judgment away and gave it to her and said, do you like it?
Yes. Uh-huh. And that's what, that was the moment where I feel like she was no longer like, casing him out like the scissors did it by themselves. You know what I mean? She no longer felt the need to lie. And I think that's what we erase when we're not accusatory, when we're not coming out looking for a winner and a loser. And the same thing goes for, like, today the children were playing, and we have this little swing that's attached to the house, and one of the kids was swinging and his foot kicked another child. So she was crying, and her brother was hugging her and huddling around her. And instead of running and hiding, or instead of denying or lying, or instead of all the other things that a child who thinks they're going to get in trouble does, the child who kicked her got off the swing, came right over to us and said, Emmy's crying. I kicked her. It was an accident. I kicked her with my shoe, and it hurt. So it just goes to show that they know that they're in a place where they're going to be supported. They're going to be heard. They're going to be believed. And they're not going to get in trouble. And that's why we don't do timeout. That's why we don't do exclusion. That's why we don't do punishment. That's why I don't call the parents and say, your child kicked Susie in the face, or whatever it is. I don't do that because it's a process that needs to happen right in that moment. Yes, we do communicate with the parents, but by the time I communicate with them, it's the whole story. It's the how it started, the process that it went through, how they solve the problem, if they solve the problem, where we're at on the spectrum. But it's pretty clear to them that we don't want them to go home and punish the child. That it's not.
Yeah, and because that's the other thing I was just going to mention that's related to that, which is when you're conveying it to the parent, it's informative not to elicit a judgment from the parent. Because if you're telling the parent because you want them to be upset and then punish the child, then what you're saying to them is, here's the situation, you need to judge it as bad and do something about it. But what we do is we provide that information. We just say, okay, this is what happened and this is how they solved it, so that there doesn't need to be a judgment attached. It's just purely informative.
Exactly. And I think that parents are amazed at the outcomes. And like the bunny story, I mean, I know these two children, I know their capabilities, and I was still pretty like jaw dropped at the fact that they were able to come from a 10 all the way to a 0 and use these tools to support their need to talk to each other, but also their need to separate, you know, themselves, themselves in that moment. So it's pretty awesome. It really is to be in an environment where children have those freedoms and have that sense of support, that they're not worried that they're going to get, you know, berated, because you're not going to make a child behave better by making them feel bad. They're not going to behave better because you're not going to guilt them into being quote unquote good. That's not how it works. You know?
I mean, basically, I did a thing like the perspectives video on bad behavior. And that's basically when the kids do something, we look at it as, what are they trying to learn? And so if you're berating a kid and you're telling them what they're doing is not good, you're not leaving that learning space open, because all that they're learning is, I'm bad. Whereas if you take the whole context of what they're doing and then figure out what it is they're trying to learn, you leave that space for them to kind of go, oh, okay, this is what I'm figuring out, you know. So, you know, in some of the particular cases of, you know, when you were working with the kids were learning how to communicate with each other. So you were leaving that space for them to learn to communicate. Whereas if you had gone over and just said, okay, you get the wagon first, you get the wagon first, they don't have that space to learn how to communicate with each other. Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a big importance when you're looking at, you know, not making those judgments, is leaving that space for learning open. And that's what's really important about a child-directed classroom or a child-directed approach.
I love this topic, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again. I think we want to talk about this from a different perspective. Do you want to talk about that? Maybe we'll do that next episode when we talk about it in terms of
learning how to
in terms
work
of
conflict.
Yes, conflict and exclusion. I'm sorry, I had a brain fart. We were talking about it in terms of conflict and exclusion from that perspective. So maybe we could do that next episode and kind of have these be a buddy to each other.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. I can't wait till next week.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you, Barb?
If you'd like to find more information about me or my program, it's located in Barrie, Ontario. That's B-A-R-R-I-E in Canada. And you can check me out on Facebook at Barrie Forest Kindergarten or on the web at www.barrieforestkindergarten.com. And on our Facebook page, you can link to our blog to hear our perspectives on nature, kids, play, education, and where they all intersect. So what about you, Keisha? Where can they find you?
Okay, you can find me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/discoveryearlylearning. And you can also find me at Play Empowers, sharing the power of play. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
This has been the Dirty Playologist, back next week with another episode. Thanks for listening.
You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.